Hello, and we're back. Tech Days Online, Azure edition now with added cloud. With me sitting on the sofa is my good friend, former colleague, Steve Spencer. And just before we crack into the really exciting topic of Service Fabric, I have a few messages from our sponsor who will hurt me if I don't start talking about them. So, first off, I want to bring your attention to a really, really interesting event that Microsoft UK are organizing on the 6th of October, when Satya Nadella is over here in the UK, and he's going to be speaking. If you have a hunt around the hashtag Tech Days on Twitter, I'm fairly sure that our infinite monkeys will be tweeting links to the registration page and telling you more about that. I'm certainly going to be there. It sounds like it should be fun. And the second thing that I've been told to really push home, Steve and I, as you probably know, are MVPs. What does that stand for? Microsoft Most Valuable Professional. It's the only time anybody ever calls me a professional. It's a program that rewards people for their activities in the community. I've been receiving care in the community for some time now. So if, like myself and Steve, you do a lot of speaking, you run user groups, maybe you organize community conferences, if you're keen and enthusiastic about helping other people in our profession be better at what they do and learning about technologies, doesn't necessarily have to be the Microsoft stack. We're all about open source and Microsoft loves Linux these days. You can nominate yourself. You can nominate other people to become MVPs. And if you take to your search engine of choice and start hunting down Microsoft MVP, I'm pretty sure that mvp.microsoft.com, which is the main MVP base site, will give you some information on how you can put forward yourself or some other willing and gloried individual. And with that, so I'm going to turn to my friend Steve here. And I've managed to entice him. It's his first days on Tech Days Online. I'm really excited to have him. And Steve, you're going to talk to us about Service Fabric for the next 45 minutes.
I am. So, quick introduction. I'm Steve. I work for TDX now in Nottingham, and I'm a solution architect. So, my Twitter handle's there. I do quite a lot of blogging, mainly Azure-based stuff. So, if have a look at that, see what you can see. It's
absolutely
good.
Absolutely. I certainly, everything I know about Service Fabric, I read on his blog.
So, that's good. So, we'll talk about Service Fabric, but I need to talk a bit about microservices first, just sort of set the scene, and then we'll go into how we can program it, we'll do some demos, we'll look at the scalability, that sort of thing. So when we're building applications, traditionally, you sort of do three-tier type things. So you'll have some sort of web front end or some presentation logic, and then you'll have a business logic in the middle and some database back end. And generally, you'll put those services on to sort of three different machines or a set of machines. And if you want to scale out, you have to duplicate that machine and copy that software over. When looking at microservices, you'll break the application down into lots of smaller chunks. And ideally, then, you'll put them on a number of machines. And because they're smaller, you can generally get more of those services onto one machine.
So are those microservices replacing the whole of that former three-tier? Or is it really that the business logic tier, maybe, that we used to have in the olden days is the bit that you...
Well, you could do everything, or you could just do part of it. So you could put your bits of your website up on as little services up there. You can have your web services. You can have all your back-end services as well. So it's up to you how you build your application. I'm not going to tell you how, but what I'm trying to do is sort of guide you in the tools that you can use to help you get there and where Service Fabric goes. So if I was building a microservices framework now without using anything like Service Fabric or anything similar, I'd probably have IIS running with a load of web services on there, and then I might have some Windows services on my servers, and they may or may not be on a number of different boxes. And if I want to scale out, I have to copy that Windows service, install it on another box, and manage all that myself. So I have to manage the state of it. If it falls over, I've got to monitor it, that sort of thing. That's where Service Fabric comes in. So what Service Fabric gives you is basically a framework to deploy your microservices into. So you could take your Windows services, build it as a microservice on Service Fabric. It will manage the life cycle of that service. It will tell you when it's gone down. It will try and restart it, and if it's a hardware failure or machine failure, it'll move it to one that's working, that sort of thing. Service Fabric will run on a number of platforms. So as you expect, it's in Azure. So you can go into the Azure portal, you can provision yourself a Service Fabric cluster. But you can also take those same executables that run in Azure and deploy them on your on-premises servers. So you can have a cluster on-prem. You could even put it into Amazon, if you like, in another cloud.
Okay, and I noticed only yesterday, day before yesterday, that not only is this now something you can install on Windows, and I could install it for you on our tin if I wanted to, but I hear it's also now on Linux. So we're truly flexible, aren't we? In any cloud, any platform, pays your money, takes your choice.
Yeah, that's it. And the idea is you can run any application on any of those platforms. And also from a developer's point of view, I have it running on here. I have it running locally. When I've installed the SDK, I get the same executable you run in the cloud running on here. So it's not an emulator, it's the actual...
Okay, so you can hit a sort of an F5, compile, deploy,
and
test
machine. I'll show you that as part of my demo in a second.
Great.
So the other good thing I like is Microsoft are using Service Fabric for their own services. So I think the big one on that list is SQL Database. If the trust in Service Fabric to run all your SQL database, it says 1.4 million there, but I suspect that's larger now, because this slide is slightly old. But if Microsoft are trusting SQL Server on there, then it's good for me. It must be proving itself to be solid platform. So that they're
battle
actually
hardened,
yes,
tested.
I'm quite happy for all the issues of the platform to be taken out by somebody else before I get to play with it. So it's good for me. So we'll just do a quick demo. What I want to show you is if we go to the Azure portal, we can easily create a new Service Fabric cluster. So this should allow me to click on and create a new cluster. What will happen here is I can do loads of config. I have to give it a unique name. A login name.
Interestingly enough, I noticed the other day that if you type admin into that username box, it won't let you do it. It won't let you have admin or administrator.
Same as if you put password 1 in the password, it won't let you do that either.
Yeah, that's my login gun.
I know, that's... And we can use issues is behind the scenes, the Azure resource template. So you can either create a new one, or we can pick one that we've already created. We can also pick the type of virtual machine I want to run this on. So I've created a single node type in this service. I'm not. I could have multiple ones, so I may have a web one, a back-end service, or whatever. And I can actually pick the VM size. So it comes up by default with some recommended VMs, but this is me building a test sort of cluster. So I don't really want the battle-hardened production service. So what we'll do is we'll go down and find the when the pricing one comes up. We'll pick the
Uber cheap
one. I've got this running. I'll show it in a sec. Using this, and it runs for what I need. I can also set the scalability level I want, so I'm actually going to lower the reliability, and I'm going to go into 3.
So I think it's worth just dwelling on this for a moment while you're clicking buttons. The thing about Service Fabric is this template is going to provision under the hood a cluster of servers, isn't it? That Service Fabric is spread across. And we can scale that cluster out using the UI that you were just showing there, where you move the dial. Yep. But we may want to scale it up, and I think really that does depend to a large extent on things like how much memory your microservices start to consume, that kind of stuff, isn't it? So it's something to play with and monitor, maybe.
So I can change the number of machines. I can also change the type of machine I want, so I can make it scale up and scale out. So I've picked an unsecure, because it's just for tests, I don't need any security on there. So what that's given me now is I get the ability, if I hit the create button, it's just going to check, that will go away and provision that for me.
Okay.
But I can also download this as Azure Resource Template.
We like Azure
Resource Template. And then I can go and do my own thing with that. So I can change it. I can add extra servers in there. So if I have some services that I don't want to put in a cluster, but I want a machine there that will run them. Maybe I've got some legacy code that I don't want to migrate, but I want it in the environment. I can change this and then deploy it separately. So
I know on Tuesday we were talking about the whole infrastructure as code approach. So are you doing this? You build the template to provision your Service Fabric environment, and then you've got some way of provisioning your bits, your microservices into that Service Fabric cluster.
Yeah, but so at the moment what I'm doing is I'm building my services in as a proof of concept. So I've got, I want Visual Studio, not PowerPoint. OK. can't do much coding in PowerPoint. Well, somebody you probably can, actually. So what we're trying to do in Visual Studio, I've installed the Service Fabric SDK.
Okay, and is that a specific SDK or is that part of the Azure SDK?
No, that's separate. So you can deploy the Azure one, you get some bits, which I'll show you in a bit, but you also get, with Service Fabric, you get this extra icon, so you do new projects in a similar way to what you're doing with the ISP.NET web stuff. There's now this Service Fabric. I can click on there, and what it does is it allows me to pick a number of different types of service I want to run. So there's a stateless, a stateful, act, there's a whole load, guest executable. So the idea is with this, it makes it easy for you to build an application. And from a developer's point of view, we're trying to do this, it's a familiar development environment. I haven't had to learn a whole new set of tools to do this. I've gone in here, clicked on the thing, and it builds it for me. So what this is going to do is build the application, it's going to build that service, and it's going to configure everything up, and I can deploy that. It'll even have a sort of a template service which will run, and you can see it running.
Okay.
So it gives you that. All I have to do now is write my code that's specific to that service. So this is easy. I don't have to. I've not had this big learning curve to get into this, and it's using stuff I already know. So from a developer's point of view, I like that. I don't have to learn anything new. So if you see what it's built me an application, and it's also built me this stateless service. And we can look in here. I can go in, and you see that it says stateless, and there's a whole set of there's this thing called a manifest, application manifest, which basically wraps everything together, and the service will have a service manifest that defines it, so you can define your endpoints. So right. Like if you want a web port opening to, because you're doing a website or a service or whatever, you can set that up.
So can I have more than one service within an application?
So I can in Visual Studio, you can click, click and you do add, and you get that same dialogue up, so you can add some more. I'll show you that later on as part of my demo. So if we look at this stateless service, it has a run method. So this is like sort of your worker thread. You go in, you put your code in here, and all this is doing is this bit of code here actually just affects your debug out in Service Fabric. So when we run this in the debug, you'll see that we'll get a diagnostics window with and it just should say working and it'll iterate through. So I could run this and deploy it, and I'll do that a bit later. So the other thing I've got here is the Cloud Explorer. This is part of the Azure SDK, and you can see it's got this entry here for Service Fabric. So if I click on, if you can see that.
So is that your, here's a cluster I prepared earlier in the cloud?
So what I've got there is a local. So local is what's running on my box.
Right.
So you remember I said it was a set of executables, the same thing, and you get this little icon, and I can right click and I do manage that. I can set it, restart it, that sort of thing.
Okay.
But I've also got, if we go back to the Azure portal, where we had
I feel obliged to mock you for using Internet Explorer at this point, Steve.
But yeah, but I'm using Edge as well, so I'm being, at least, anyway. I'll can show you that again. But in the portal, I would have already provisioned this cluster, and it's actually deployed one of my applications into there, so you can actually view the application. You see what version it is. You can see it's made up of an application and a whole load of services in there.
All right. Yeah.
Similarly, if I ram in the debugger, I would get the same sort of thing in there, and I can view it.
Okay.
If I right click, I can do this thing called a Service Fabric Explorer, and here's one I prepared earlier. So if we look in, I have a number of different services. So this one is running on my local machine. So this is the development cluster. It's got five nodes. There's an application there because I'm not actually debugging anything.
Right.
The one that was in deployed earlier in Azure is here. So the same thing you saw on the Cloud Explorer, you'll see that I've got the application with all the services running.
Okay.
Yep. But I've also got that same cluster deployed on a set of virtual machines. So if we look at my virtual machines, I've got a three node cluster. So I've just created three Windows servers. I've taken the PowerShell that comes with Service Fabric, and I've created this JSON file, which defines the cluster that I want. So it's got my machine names, the type. You can define what's called fault domains. So that means if something fails in your network, you move your cluster onto different fault domains so that one thing shouldn't take your service out. And you've got a similar thing for upgrade domains. So define this, run some PowerShell, and effectively uses remote PowerShell to deploy that out to the cluster. It was really easy. I didn't have to, I just set the machines up to enable remote PowerShell, and that was all I needed to do, and it just did it for me.
That's quite sweet.
So the cluster in the cloud, you can actually see this, it shows the health.
That's red, Steve. That doesn't look good.
No, it isn't good. And the reason for that is my machine's not quite powerful enough to run everything that I need.
Right.
So I have a number of other servers like SQL Server and a RabbitMQ server running. So in order to be able to actually run this machine without losing all my cores, I've turned those two off. So needless to say, when I try and run through this, I end up with a red square.
Okay.
So it should somewhere be able to see what the error is. Oh well, it doesn't show up. If I looked at the
somewhere we get a message that says there's a node missing.
Yeah,
there we go.
No, the error actually says cannot connect to the RabbitMQ server. So the reason why this is red is because I don't have those servers running. But what I wanted to show you is it's actually showing you the health of my, it's saying there's something wrong, and I can go and dig through and I can actually pull that out.
It's quite nice. And it's nice that it's completely consistent. It's exactly the same interface, same portal, so whether it's cloud or not cloud, isn't it?
Yeah, so I mean, you can see that the addresses are different. So that's my local VM. That's my local host, so that's the one that's running down here. And then this one's got an Azure address. So from a consistency point of view, it's really good. And it's the same thing. And we can do things like, I can actually go in if I wanted to delete that service.
Okay.
I can go into the nodes and I can restart them or whatever, or delete. If there's a problem with it, I can take it out altogether, sort of thing. So it's really handy from a management point of view. I can see what's going on.
So can I have more than one Service Fabric application running on a given Service Fabric cluster as well?
Yeah, I mean, you'll be limited to the number of resources that you cluster. So like I use those A0, so they're a bit limited. So it may run a bit slow, but you can put as well whatever you want in, and they will all scale up. Depending on how you've configured it, it will scale them up
accordingly.
So. We'll go back to the slides. So I talked about the application and how it was made up of an application set of services. So the first thing you need to know is each service has a service type.
Awesome.
And that's effectively a manifest file that defines that service. And it defines the code package, says where to get the executable from. It's got a whole lot of config to do with it and maybe some extra data as well. And you can version those up independently. So I could deploy version 2 of one service without touching the rest, and it will just upgrade that one service.
Oh, that's clever. So if you've got 4 services in your app, you can say just upgrade, I don't know, the web listener, not the...
Yeah,
okay,
cool. It's really good. And you wrap those set of services up in an application. So I have multiple application types, so I answered your question previously.
Right.
I'll just create another application type. I may have some of the same services in there, I may have a different set. So I can compose my application of all the services I've already built. And that's the application manifest file I mentioned a bit further.
Okay.
And there's sort of a number of different models of service that you can put onto there. So the first one's a guest executable. The idea behind that is I can put any application that runs in Windows, so on a Windows Server Fabric, any application that runs in Windows I can put as a guest executable.
So if we've got maybe a console app or something that we want to push.
So if you can run the command line, you can put it into Service Fabric. So you could run, I've seen demos with Node.js running in Service Fabric. You can take any executable, you can run a PowerShell, you can run a script, that sort of thing, and have it as part of your service. It needs to have some sort of like worker thread type model so it could continue running.
Okay.
The next one is reliable services. So that example I showed in Visual Studio where I'll create that service, that's part of the reliable services framework.
Right.
That's part of the SDK, you can build your services and there's stateful and stateless. If you've got stateful, there's a whole load of collections to do with managing that state, and I'll talk a bit about that in a sec. And the other one is reliable actors. Now, what this is it's built on top of the reliable services, so you can have an actor model, and it's really easy to build, and you can use that. I'm not going to talk about that today. I'm going to talk more about the reliable services.
Okay.
So, for all those three models, you've got the same sort of base sort of capabilities, which is fast deployment. the Fabric will put those in the right places on the cluster where it makes sense, where there's enough sort of load, it will maintain reliability, it will bring them up and down. If something fails, it will move them, that sort of thing. So you get all that for free. You get the health reporting, as you saw, and you get coordinated upgrades. So it'll try and maintain what at least one service running, providing you've got more than one provision. If you can scale them up and down. So if I only have one, then there's no way I can upgrade that with that.
Yeah, okay.
So if you're looking at guest executables, you pretty much have, you take your executable package so that the execute all the assemblies, any config and other files you need, and you put that in a folder, you wrap it up in a manifest file, and then it'll deploy. And I'll show you in a sec, Visual Studio makes that really easy to do as well. You can also do it with containers, so you can, instead of having an exe host, you can have a container host.
Okay.
So Docker and Windows containers, you'll be able to use that.
That's quite cool.
So I've mentioned the Reliable Services Program model, so that was the SDK, and what that gives you is the first thing is service endpoint discovery. So I've built this web service, for example, and I deploy three instances into the cluster. I don't actually know where they are, so therefore I don't know what the URL is.
Of each individual service, you mean?
So therefore my application that calls it, so I have one of my other services wants to use that web service, how do I find out what it's called? So there's this service endpoint discovery. So each service has like a Fabric address. So you basically go to Fabric, say, give me this service, and it will return you back the URL. So it's really helpful, really useful. Similarly, you can, if your application is on a server that's really busy, it could move it somewhere else and give it a bit more power.
Okay.
And there's a number of patterns. I already mentioned the actor pattern, there's the web API. So a lot of these are built on top of the Reliable Services model, so trying to make things easier. And as you've seen, Visual Studio is really easy. I've not had a big learning curve, and it's really useful. So I mentioned about stateful and stateless. So in our traditional model that we talked about earlier, we generally have a web front end, a business logic, and a data layer. And you can see all those arrows going across will be a network hop, and there'll be some latency involved and whatever. And if you want to make things performant, you want to make it scalable, then you want to try and reduce those hops. So what you might do is put some sort of caching layer in to speed that up. But what they've done in Service Fabric is move that data and put it next to the compute. So it's slightly different model to the way you may be used to. So you might be used to writing to SQL, so you maybe have to rethink about some of how your data works somehow. You can use these stateful collections that have been built, and I'll touch on those in a sec.
So does that mean I can't use a database at the back of that?
No, you can.
So it's just like, it means I don't have to if I don't want to.
It's the same with everything. If you use a stateful, it manages it for you. It makes the data resilient and replicated just out of the box, so you don't have to manage that yourself, and it's faster. So if you've got a speed problem of accessing data, then you can use these stateful collections to make that locally to your machine sort of thing. So it does speed things up. So these reliable collections, if you look at the history of .NET collections, you started off with normal collections which were single-threaded on a single machine. Then we had these concurrent collections which allowed me to do things with multi-threaded and it managed safe access to that, to the data. Now we've got these things called reliable connections which builds on top of that, which means I can put it on multiple machines, it's replicated the data, it's persistent, it works on transactions, that sort of thing. So the whole model is built for a distributed architecture. And it comes in two forms. One's a dictionary, so reliable dictionary, or a reliable queue. So all those are transactional. And the way that works is if you see the code at the bottom here, it's getting a message off a queue, and then it's doing something with a dictionary, and then doing some help with two other dictionaries, and then at the end it commits. So if during this process something fails, so it takes a message off the queue, it adds it to this first dictionary, adds it to the second dictionary, and it fails adding it to the third, then the transaction will fail and it will roll back everything, so that message will eventually end back on the queue without actually changing anything. But if everything works, everything's fine, the commit's successful, so the commit will commit to your primary node, and then it will at least try and get it onto, there's a set of rules to determine how many other nodes it needs to put on the data before it says it's committed successfully.
Okay.
And then, so basically everything will happen or nothing will happen, so you know that if something goes wrong that the data's consistent.
Right, but you, largely, it sounds like you don't need to worry about it. You'll just get a message that says, hi, everything's fine, or it's all gone wrong, do it again.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mentioned it replicates. So, you see we've got a number of different services there. These ones are primary. So when it's stateful, you need a primary and secondary node. So the data will get written to the primary one and then get replicated out. So if something goes wrong with one of those primary nodes, or one of the secondary ones will take control, and the data will be there. So because it's because the transaction has made sure it's copied somewhere else first. So it's also stored backed up onto disk, so if the whole fabric went down, you wouldn't lose your data as well.
So if we've got primaries and secondaries and things like that, does that mean I've got to worry about elections and failover and handling that in my application, or does the fabric just deal
fabric
with it?
Fabric deals with it. I don't even need to worry, which makes another reason why I like this. I don't have to. I like being lazy with programming. I don't have to do stuff. If the framework does it, then that's good for me. So
I'm saying lazy. You're going to go efficient, economical.
Yeah. Okay. So I mentioned failure. So here we've got a number of machines in a cluster with different services, and one of those machines is going to fail for whatever reason. The fabric will automatically spin up those services that fail on another machines. You may see a bit of a, depending on how many instances you have running and what's happening, if the service was running on one of those services that when it went down, you would see a blip, but it's really quick and you should just, most of the time you won't notice anything.
Okay.
And if that comes back up, then it will work out what it needs to move. It might not move the same services back, But it will manage. The cluster does that.
You don't need to worry about it. That's quite nice.
So similar with upgrading. So I mentioned earlier about upgrade domains and fault domains. So with an upgrade domain, you put your different service in different upgrade domains, which means I can upgrade them, or a set of services at each one time. So we've got a service here which is about to be upgraded. It goes to version 2. Now you can see I've got two other services running, both at version 1. So my code now needs to be aware that I may have done a database schema change, so I need to make sure that version 1 still works with that new schema change.
Right.
Because if you imagine I've got 1,000 nodes, it's going to take a while to upgrade all of those.
So it doesn't shut down your application,
no.
It does a one by one ripple out replacement.
So it's upgraded the first one, it's upgraded the second one, and then finally upgrade the third one. So there will be a period of time when both service versions are running at the same time.
Okay.
And I guess it depends how quick you're writing your software and how quick it's upgrading. You could end up having multiple versions out there, depending on if you've got a massive cluster.
So what happens if my upgrade goes wrong? You deploy version 2, there's a bug in version 2, and it dies.
Well,
while
you can
we're
roll,
does
you
it
can
roll,
roll
back,
back
as
you
well?
Can, well, if it dies, the service fabric will try and restart it.
Right.
So you can then roll back if there's an issue.
Okay, and is that why we put our manifests in there then?
Yeah.
So we
can, so you can version each of the manifests and it'll be able to pull the right files back.
Okay.
So we'll quickly nip back to some demos. So what I've been building is a proof of concept, and in this I've got a whole load of services, and in my manifest you can see I've got three services in there. But one of the ones I wanted to do is I built this service which basically we do a lot of file management, so I wanted to sort of do a proof of concept whereby we get a file in, we do something with it, we store it in a database, we then process a file.
Right.
And I was trying to break this down into services. So I build this locally on my dev machine at work in an internal cluster, in the same cluster I showed you on Hyper-V, and it was running with RabbitMQ and it was using Redis and the SQL database. But I wanted to push it up into the cloud. So I deployed it into the service fabric, but then I had an issue. I didn't have a RabbitMQ instance, so I converted to service bus.
Right.
And I also used the Redis in Azure, and I used SQL Server in Azure, and just basically deployed everything, changed the connection strings, everything was fine.
Okay, so effectively you'd started with something that was IaaS on-prem.
Yeah, on-prem.
And then you moved it, and you're swapping things in and out for the PaaS services as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I have one issue. We have our firewalls quite well locked down, and I don't have access. The ports to service bus were locked.
Right.
So what I did was I created my little application on-prem. It would write to Rabbit and put the message in, and my service would pick it up and pull the file through. So I had to change that. So what I did was I put an Azure queue in, which is a port 80, I think, or port 44.
A port that the firewall guys haven't blocked.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So my app would now work. What I needed a way of actually getting that onto my service bus. So I wrote a little application based upon the WebJobs SDK. So WebJobs generally runs on Azure websites as sort of a background task within there, but you can actually write it as a console app and use the SDK. And you basically put this thing called a queue trigger in. And I'm monitoring this queue. Every time I get a message on the queue, I get a message through this string. And all I need to do then is basically push that out onto our service bus. So normally I would run this and deploy it into a web app in Azure, but what I did was run it locally, and then I can, as a console app, or I can actually wrap it up as a guest XP pool, host it in Service Fabric.
Okay, and so it's a good way of sort of prototyping what you're trying to do without needing huge changes to infrastructure.
So the way I did that was I added a new Service Fabric service, and I hit guest executable.
Right.
I can then browse to that executable, and then I can link it to the folder, and it will give me a list of the programs that are in that folder. I select the one, and any arguments I need, and hit OK.
So even though you wrote it originally as a web job to be hosted on the web jobs service, because you've done it as that console, like, you can put it into Service Fabric instead.
So what that does is it copies a package into the application manifest folder, and in the manifest you'll see that it's got somewhere. Yeah. Wrong place.
You can go blind looking at XML.
It's in the Service Fabric. It's in the service one. So this basically says run that executable.
Oh, right,
there's no arguments and just. So that was that. You remember on the slide there was the exe host. So that this was all put in for me. I've not done any work. So again. Right. really, really
good. Visual Studio Pixies just take care of it. We like that.
So the other thing I had was we have a lot of WCF services and REST APIs, that sort of thing. So what I wanted to do we host them all on IIS. I want to see if we could get one of those into Service Fabric.
Okay.
So I built a service which basically stores documents in a database. So it's just got an interface and a service file. So you'd host this in IIS as normal. And what I wanted to do was use that without changing any code, push that up into Azure. So I have this. I missed a bit. In the I can't see it. File store service. So what I've done is I've wrapped the service up in a Service Fabric stateless service, and there's a WCF wrapper. And you basically put your, so this code here would be the same code I've run in to get it running.
So does that mean you could have ported that across from an older service?
Yeah, so I haven't done any code changes.
Okay.
I've defined in the service manifest, I'll define an endpoint. So I've got this endpoint. As long as you use that name on port 8081, I can call my service and run it. So that all I've done is taken exactly the same code, wrapped it around with this wrapper and deployed it.
Okay.
So it was really easy to do. And then in order to call it, I've created a service which basically takes that message off the service bus when I've got a new file, pulls that file from blob storage, and then we have a whole load of code. So generally set some properties up to call into WCF service, so that's what I'm doing in there. But the bit that we're interested in is how do we actually call the service. So this is the code pretty much that we need to access it from Service Fabric. So you remember I mentioned that service address resolver?
Mm-hmm.
We need to create that. So these two lines pretty much are about, or these three lines are about asking the fabric to tell me where that service is, give me the URL. So we have this address, so there's a fabric address. So that's the name of the app.
Yep.
So we have, where have my apps gone on here? There, a Service Fabric app, and then we have the service name. So that's the service that I've wrapped. So it goes back to the Service Fabric and says, give me the URL. Once I have that, I can then just pretty much call the method. So this is the same bit of code you would call. I have not changed anything in terms of that the service side. So it lets me write, call WCF services without really having to make any changes. So that was really useful. What else have we got on here?
You're the man with the demo list,
mate. Oh, yeah. So go back to the first application. So this is the application I built as the first part of the demo, so I have that state of the service in there.
Right.
So if I can put a breakpoint in here, and I can just hit F5 like you would do normally, what it's doing is it's loading that up onto the Service Fabric local cluster.
Okay.
So for debugging, I can go in, I can just run it as if it was running locally, well, it is running locally, isn't it? But it's the same environment from which I would do any debugging of anything, and hopefully this will spin up fairly quickly.
So does that mean that on that Service Fabric Explorer you had, you'd see a new application popping up and you start getting more information for
this.
We
should see that when it's deployed. So so if we look at the local one, this should appear in here in a minute with an application. When it actually gets up.
Once it gets going.
Yeah, it might not because I've got a breakpoint, but if we just take that off for a second and run that, then we should. You see the application's appeared. So I can drill into that in the same way I could before. You see it says application one and it should have status service. So it's all healthy, which is lucky. Yep. I can put the breakpoint in there and it hits it and you can see. It's also got this diagnostics event, so that output we're saying, let me take that breakpoint off because you can see it running. So you can see in here that this is just basically going around that loop every second or whatever, it's printing out that.
Yep.
Let me stop the debugging. What you can also do, which I think is really neat, is I can go into here, which is the one that's running in Azure, I can right click, attach debugger.
Ooh.
So this will go do remote debugging into the cloud. It may take a while, so we'll just see if it doesn't pop up. And it should give me a list of all the services in there. I should be able to click on them and put breakpoints in exactly the same way. It won't, I needed to do that in the other project actually, because that has all the code in, because it's deployed the previous project. So we'll leave that for now. But just so that it is possible and it's really good, because so you can actually break into the actual running live code,
quite such a powerful laptop, maybe you could deploy a little cluster into Azure on your Azure subscription and use that and debug against that.
Okay. So what we want to do with this is we want to build a stateful service.
Right.
So again, I go into here, and this time I'm going to pick the stateful. And again, the SDK will add that. That was quick, so it's added already. You'll see it's added another service in there. The application manifest has another service in, and a different service has been created. So again, I go in here. We have that same run async method. That's the wrong one. It's one I've just looked at. Stateful. So that's why I had the same at run async. It was the same file. So we've got it again. But this time, what this is trying to do is use. Remember, there was these collections. So this is using a reliable dictionary. Again, this is just template code out of the box. It gives you that framework so you can actually get started, and it pretty much gives you an example of how to use it. So again, it's really useful. And what this is doing is it's creating that dictionary, and then it creates a transaction. You have to do it in a transaction. And it's saying,
is that what you were talking about before about it either works or it doesn't? And it's because you've got it in a transaction, it will just roll it back if it doesn't complete.
So this is going to get out of that dictionary something called counter.
Okay.
The first time through, it won't have a value, so you should get that trace value doesn't exist. The next time, and it then adds a value into it, increments the number and stores it, and then hits commit. So it will save that back. So if all this works, the next time round you should have one in there, so this will come around and pull one out, and we should see upon our trace the same thing as the working one. You should see current counter value, and it should be incrementing. So if we run this, in the debugger, again, it's deploying it out, so it's building.
And that's going to your local cluster,
yeah? I've got it locally, yeah. No, I didn't want to push it out to Azure. Cause
where's your sense of adventure?
So let's see. That diagnostic window should pop up. So it's registering the application. So this time it's different to previously because it's got more than one in there. It's got the diagnostics events coming up. So we should see.
Once it gets itself rolling.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go.
So it started. So this we should start seeing working, and there we are. So this is a stateless one. So this is coming through, it's working 1, 2, 3, 4. So in a second, we should see the stateful one coming through when that one pops up. There we are, it's coming. There we are. No, that's not it. So it's registered it. There we are. So count values coming through, look, 1, 2, 3. So we've got the stateful one and the stateless one running.
Right.
If I go to my localhost and go into the nodes, you can see that each application has different ones running on there. So we should see that stateful is on a number of number of nodes. So this is where I do the replicas.
Yep.
But what I can do is I could go and restart that node. So the one that had the stateless service on is restarted.
Right.
So if we go back to here, what you should see on here, it'll drop it. There'll be a failure. And it's gone now after tracing, working, has disappeared, and now it's come back.
Okay.
But it's got a different number now.
Yeah.
So let me just pause that a second. You see that it started back at 1, so it was at 40, 41.
Because it's lost its memory.
Because
it's
got it was no state.
Yep, yeah, gotcha. Okay.
So if we go, let's reactivate that and go back, and we'll take, where's state for? Let's take one of these and do the same with that. So what you shouldn't see, you shouldn't really see any difference with this one because it's stateful. So you might see a message saying the server's gone down at some point.
But it should spin up a new instance and
read
the state.
But the number shouldn't ever change because it's got stateful. So it will happen eventually. So we had a bit of a blip there actually. I wonder whether that was where it's because there was a gap, you see.
Yep.
So I wonder whether it's already done it, so we can't see. So
that's what you wanted, wasn't it?
Yeah. So
no noticeable fault. Yeah. No.
So
no
it's a really
error.
Good demo of that. So you can't really see what's going on, but hopefully that proves a point. Quickly onto go back to my original application. I mentioned about configuration.
Yep.
So if we go to the application manifest file again, right at the top, you see there's a whole set of properties I've created.
Yep.
So each one of these defines a configuration that I want to pass in.
Right.
Now the services then, you configure each service, so they're looking at, they have a subset of those configuration settings.
Okay.
And in the publish application parameters, you see I've got three different files.
Oh, so you can change the values of those depending on which environment you push to.
So I can. So each one has a whole set. So this is for it running on my cluster on my machine at work, whatever. I can actually go in to here and hit publish. And what it gives me is it gives me my different publish profiles.
Okay.
So if I do local, it's trying to deploy. This should spin up and have a tick and say it's local cluster. If I want to publish it in the cloud, it'll do the same. And you can see it's changing this parameters file for each one. And if I pick my TDX one, that's the one running on my local box. So I can deploy. So exactly the same way, I pick which one I want and I want to publish.
That's quite sweet. So we can have one project, multiple servers on your machine for dev. We can have one in the cloud for production, maybe one running a couple of boxes, and you just select and off you go.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm not a big fan of Hero Developer hitting F5 and deploying to my production service, but
we
should be able to wire that into VSTS.
But what you get with this, though, is you get this... I can't find it now. In here, it should be... There we are, scripts.
Yeah.
Get deployment script.
Yep.
So there's a PowerShell file. Yep. I hit publish. I hit package. Packages up the application. You then run that. I give that to my friendly IT manager. He passes it to his team to deploy.
Yeah.
So I don't even need to worry.
And it's all managed, and we're not manually editing files, so we can't mess it up.
Yeah, so it's all checked in. So if you've got TFS with Release Manager, you can get it to push it out to wherever you want and run that script. So from a ALM point of view, it's pretty good as well.
That's great. Well, we're nearly out of time.
We've got
summary slide.
So we've mentioned that this is I've showed you it running on three different platforms. You can push it into a different cloud, so you can run it anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So you run it in Azure, run it on a cloud, run it on-prem, run it locally. And you can run pretty much anything that on the Windows servers, if it runs on Windows from a command line, you can run it, or you can build it in any language and whatever. We've got a number of program models, we've got reliable services, we've got those reliable connections to give you that resilience with data. And Service Fabric does all the hard work for me. I don't have to manage anything, it does it, I don't have to worry. And the nice thing is Microsoft uses it for own services.
So we can
so for me, that's really good.
That's brilliant. Well, I've got 30 seconds left on the timer, which means I've just got time to say thanks for that, Steve.
Sorry.
That was great, that was really interesting. Coming up after the break, the wonderfully titled on Twitter, Scroff the Bad, Unsung heroes of Azure. I'm trying to get them to do the next session using musical theatre just for the heck of it. So, you know, get out there on Twitter and give them a bit of love. That means I can have a break. I'm going to have an hour off. I'm going to go sit in the back with Steve, maybe see if you've got questions on Twitter. Don't go away. Tune in 15 minutes. I'm sure it'll be fun. Thank you very much.